This is a production of Cornell University.
But I think we can go ahead and get this meeting called to order. And we can start with a roll call. I don't know if Gina or Dakota were able to do that. I can do that if not.
Sorry. Dakota, if you could do the roll call, that would be great.
Well, looks like Dakota's not able to get audio, so.
Let me see, hang on.
I can pull that up, no problem.
Sorry about that, thank you.
That's okay. All right. So I don't have this in the alphabetical order, so I'm just gonna go with it in the way it is. So we have Nick Denev, not here. Heather Donato is here. We have Catherine Huang is not here. Risa Lieberwitz is here. Jen Michael is here. Laura Taylor is not here. And Salam Wolday is not here. So we have how many members do we have these days? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Looks like we're at 7 now. So with 4 of us here, that would be quorum, correct? Okay, yeah. The group got smaller, so you know it's a little easier to get the quorum. And actually, oh, and look, Laura Taylor just joined us. So now we are fully good to go. All right, well, welcome everyone. And I hope folks are getting a little bit of the sunshine here. I've been locked in this Zoom dungeon all day, but you know, it happens to all of us, right? So I sent out an agenda earlier. First, I want to let everyone know that our resolution passed. I believe it was number 22 is the number we got, but the resolution passed with the University Assembly with our recommendations regarding the adjustments to the appointments for the UHRB and sort of creating these two tracks of folks who are working on the old current code and then the new current code. A couple of small changes that were asked to be made, nothing major to change the nuts and bolts of what we had asked for. So really happy to see that move forward. I've asked Gina ahead of time just to kind of give us a sense of where this puts us now as we look at our very limited timeframe to finish out the semester with in regards to the University Hearing Review Board. We're going to talk a little bit about a request from the OJA in regards to operations over the summer. We'll talk about Kevin Williams and Marla Love will be visiting us, as well as Ryan Lombardi, and just kind of speak to those. So those are kind of the overview of what we have here today. And obviously, we'll have time for roundtable and discussion if we have that. So I'd like to go ahead and, if Gina is ready, turn over to you to talk a little bit about kind of where we're at with the UHRB process at this point then.
Oops, thanks, Brandon. And my apologies, I told Brandon and probably some of the students are aware we had a website crash for our elections today. So I'm sort of dealing with that. If I look like I'm looking at out of one eye, it may be that an email comes in, but I'll try not to be paying too much attention. This is really important. UHRB, and I think as we've discussed, those of you who've been on the CJC in years past know that it's a timely process. It takes time and it's important. And because we're straddling two different codes, I think where there's there's some need for clarity and input in a quick turnaround on your part in order to get, as I understand it, two different cohorts moving. So typically the process starts in February. It's the end of April. We have just a little bit of amount of time before the May 11th meeting at the UA, when that would be the sort of the end point, by which time we'd have to have for the current code, those CJ or the UHRB members approved by the UA. That can happen. But obviously there's going to be a really tight timeline for applicants to sign up, and then a very quick turnaround for you all as the CJC to review and vet, make up the resolution recommending them to get it on the agenda for that May 11th meeting. I think we have all the pieces in place to do that. You just have to be sort of willing and able and with great appreciation to do that. I had some questions on the process of staffing the fall cohort, which also needs to be staffed. According to the new student code, there's an April 1st date, by which point the different assemblies would have had to have had selected their nominees. And those would have gone then to the director, who hasn't yet been selected. The director then would consult with the executive committees of the different assemblies to have their eyes on the student candidates. And then the director would make those appointments. So very different process, very different touches from the CJC and the UA. And because there's no OC, whatever it is, the Office of Student Conduct and Community Standards yet, nor is there a director, we're sort of left with, okay, we can do a stopgap filling, because there will need to be a cohort of review board members, hearing and review board members in place as soon as the new semester starts and that code is in place. But we also need to address the need for the existing panelists to be selected. And then as Christina laid out, it's math. It's based on the number of hearings there are and the number of panelists are necessary. There's just a need to have a full cohort over the summer, which would be under the old code. So I think we can hit send on starting the solicitation. I would want to have Brandon and or some subcommittee of the CJC confirm the questions that we're asking applicants to answer are good to go. And we can get that going, probably as soon as tomorrow, if that's, that would be my recommendation, just to give as much time as possible to get that going. And then I had proposed letting the call for candidates run to May 7th. May 7th through 10th, the CJC would review the applicants. May 10th, the CJC would put together the recommendation, and on the May 11th agenda at the UA would be the resolution with the nominations. So that's, that's two different processes, two different cohorts. One addresses the immediate need. The other one, I think is, there's great wisdom, I was going to say around this table, but certainly in the room here, about whether or not to cast the net really widely and start at least getting some people that could address the new student code. But I don't have a process for that. And I would defer, I would want to make sure that the stakeholders from the Office of the Dean of Students are okay with whatever process we do. So that's sort of what I can offer in the moment. And I welcome any questions or need for clarification that you might have.
And I have a few questions, but I'll turn it to the rest of the committee before I see if there were any questions from the members. Go ahead, Risa.
This is a very basic question. Is there someplace on the website that actually has the finalized student code of conduct? Because when I look for it on the website, nothing comes up other than the campus code in terms of liberal policy.
Yes, we added it where the campus code of conduct is. I'll get you the link right now.
Thank you, Gina.
Yep.
Any other questions from committee members? I guess my questions would be, my first one would be the list of questions that you speak to that would go to the applicants. Can you clarify, is that a list that has been previously vetted by this committee, previous CJC? And have you found that that's something that needs to get changed year to year, or has it been a pretty standard sort of list?
It's a review of the candidates, and there's a rubric that's used. In years past, what we've done is actually anonymize all of the candidates so that the reviewers are looking just at the applications. Once the selections are made, we provide the de-anonymized list so that you can match up the people with their applications. And that is actually then what goes into the resolution. I think the process has proven most fair. It's obviously there are some identifiers that come through in some of the questions that are asked, which is fine, but I think to level the playing field as much as it can be, the anonymized ranking and vetting is what has worked well in the past.
Okay, and so that there's a rubric that's established, and then the questions that go to the candidates to answer, is that also a pretty established and fairly standard list of questions?
They are, and I think I'd ask Risa, and they've been tweaked from year to year, but that's mostly from my estimation. It's been just because different CJCs or UAs wanted to have sort of their own touch on it, but basically they're the same. They haven't changed much over time, and I think that I'd find that they're good, solid questions for the kind of folks that you would want to have, but again, I haven't served in the capacity of a reviewer, so anybody who has might have different thoughts.
Thank you. Laura?
In the interest of time, I think we should probably just use the questions that have gone out in the past. I reviewed, I think, the last set last year with one other CJC member, and I don't recall feeling like the questions were off or inappropriate, although I can't remember specifically what they were, but they seem fine.
Thank you, Laura. I appreciate that. And perhaps, I don't know if we wanted to look at those, but I would also entertain a motion to move forward with the list of questions previously asked of candidates if someone would like to make such a motion, or we could continue discussion on that as well.
So we don't have the questions here today, sorry. Is that right? I mean, I'm perfectly fine with it because, Laura did it recently, but just out of curiosity, do we not have them?
I don't have them. I don't know if Gina, you have them accessible.
Let's see if I can find them.
Okay. And I agree as what you said there, Laura, just from for the sake of time, being able to make that turnaround quickly, if we don't see anything glaring or concerning, which I would assume previous committees had done. Obviously, I don't think we have the ability to tailor this to the new student code of conduct. It really should just be about, kind of the standard set of questions that have asked around the UHRB members, because the new student code of conduct is not in effect, and we're really kind of hiring them under the current code.
I found the questions and the rubric, and I'll send that to through an email right now.
Great. So then I think if we look at then the timeline, if we were able to get this turned around and say to Gina, yes, we're ready to go ahead and begin the solicitation, we would send that out via email, take applications through the timeframe that Gina had mentioned there, giving us that window of May 7th through 10th, which would require that we have either a meeting or establish some sort of method in which we can grade those and send in our responses via Qualtrics or some other measure, so that we can then, because the idea there is that we wouldn't know who we were voting on, we're just voting on the answers to the questions, and then the Office of Assemblies does their work to attach our grading to the actual names and then provides those back to us, and then we would create a list to give to the UA to vote on. Am I correct in kind of that recap there, Gina?
Yes, though typically, and I think again, given the timing, we're happy to do that. Typically, we would provide you with the sort of the code to de-anonymize. And then one of the things I'm also going to send you is the grid of what we received, which is how you rank them, what your choices are, and then there's just a little note about them. But again, I think given where we are, if you make selections, we will make sure that everybody is notified and that the resolution is put together rather quickly. So,
okay. So then I think we can take a look at those questions here. Perhaps we can pause our meeting at a certain point when we get those questions sent over, and then we could take a look to perhaps be able to, if everything looks good and we feel comfortable, be able to move forward with that. Yes, go ahead, Christina.
I was wondering if there can be confirmation of how many positions we might need to fill, or that CJC needs to fill for the student hearing board member and also for the staff too, because certainly I'm just imagining the situation because there's such a tight turnover that if, for example, we need 10 students, right, and there's only 8 who apply, that kind of puts the CJC and all of us kind of in a bind too. So perhaps doing some purposeful outreach in different constituency groups where we're looking to fill a lot of vacancies will be particularly important.
Okay, we have an updated, based on the resolution that was just passed, which removed either one or two current members. And I'll send that around to the CJC members as well. I'm not sure that there are any vacancies other than the term turnovers.
So yeah, so Christina, I think the thing to keep in mind is that the UHRB will now have those students who were set to expire because of a shortened term. Those we have moved forward minus one, I believe it was Leo, was removed for conflict of interest concerns. And so in essence, there's a cohort that would be continuing on, and then everyone who was ending, we would be offering up the opportunity for them to take one of two options to either, if they would like to extend and be a part of the current code of conduct UHRB, or apply, which we could extend their term, give them a 1-year term that would end in June, or they could apply for a 2-year term that would be part of the new student code of conduct. So again, through the resolution 22, we've created two cohorts, the group that is hearing the current code of conduct and will do so until such time as all cases are heard or their term expires. And then we'll have a new student code of conduct group that will begin. So the solicitation we're doing right now is really primarily for the new student code of conduct cohort that would begin with that implementation date. And we do have in the resolution the acknowledgement that we can do a solicitation to expiring members. To address either the current code of conduct gaps or to apply to be part of the new student code of conduct group. So Gina, do you, that list of current UHRB members that kind of would transition out. Do we have that number? Is that, I know I had a spreadsheet that I've been working from, and I'm not sure how up to date it is as to how many of each in each area we would have once we remove those who are expiring naturally.
I just sent an updated as of today, an list that you should have just received. I would defer to you how you're looking at that. I'm not exactly sure which who you're putting into which cohort. So I need to pay attention also.
All right, that hasn't come through just yet, but I did get the questions and the rubric information there. So maybe perhaps while we're waiting for that to come in, if folks could take a look at the questions, it looks like there's 14 questions here. So why don't I give us a quick, 5 minutes here to have folks read through those questions and see if we have any of our own responses to those or edits that we might like to see. And that way we have that opportunity.
Did everybody get the list or still no?
Yeah. I haven't seen the list of members. I've just seen the questions.
Jen, did you get the list of members? No. All right. Well, you know what? Not sure what's going on. I'm going to send it to you individually.
While we're waiting for that, could I make a motion?
Yes, you can.
I'd like to make a motion that we accept the questions as they as we've received them from the 2020 cycle for the purpose of this current recruitment effort.
Thank you. Do I have a second?
Oh, there they are. I should have received them.
So Laura has made a motion, waiting for a second on that motion, if there are any. And we'll give folks time to read through. Second motion is seconded. Any discussion? Yes, Christina.
I apologize. I haven't seen these questions before, so this is the first time I've seen them. And I would just share that there are some suggested edits. I recognize I'm not a voting member, but for example, the Office of the Judicial Administrator is the OJA, right? There is no such thing as the JAO. So just kind of throughout, there's reference to an office that we are sunsetting, but I think it's important to reference the correct office. And I'll just share in general, I think there is there's more of a punitive light in some of these questions articulated in describing the process, things like disciplinary, punitive, it might be semantics, but I do think that there are some kind of general questions that I would expect on this list that I'm not quite seeing. So for example, having students describe what is a conflict of interest, I think would be important. Having folks describe what makes a conduct process fair and transparent, I think might be questions that we want hearing board members to explore. But a lot of it, I think a lot of these questions are about availability, which is important, of course, but I'm not seeing a lot of kind of substance-based questions that I feel like folks who are evaluating people are appropriate to serve on these boards in this very important university service, that we're not asking those questions. So those are just general thoughts.
Thank you. Risa?
Yeah. Will these questions, assuming for the moment that we use these questions, will they be updated to reflect that it's for the student code of conduct? Or will they, you know, I keep kind of missing, because I can't seem to get it to stick, you know, exactly what we're looking for. I mean, if we're looking at least, you know, for people who are going to be doing the new code, this is all based on language structured on the campus code of conduct, and that's the references. So how is that going to work?
Thank you, Risa. I think to answer the question about what we would be looking for in this application process would, in essence, be the new student code of conduct. However, there is an acknowledgement that that code of conduct is not in effect, and that there are the staff and the persons responsible for that have not been hired. So in essence, we would operate in the spirit of the current code of conduct, with acknowledgement, as we've said in the resolution 22, that the new student code of conduct will go into effect, and these folks that are applying now will receive a training yet to be created from the OCCCS, in conjunction with the director and the student and graduate assemblies.
But it doesn't seem to make any sense to ask them about the campus code of conduct then. And it may just be changing some of the terminology. And there's Christina's point, but that's more, you know, substantive. I'm really just asking about, right at this point, would we be referring to the student code of conduct, not the campus code of conduct, if that's what people are applying for?
Thank you, Risa. Christina?
It's a little bit later in the day, so my brain is also kind of a little bit slower to catch up, so I apologize. I think I'm just still a little bit confused as to whether these questions are being used for the new board or just the, you know, handful of vacancies for the current board. Because what I heard kind of Gina in explaining is, if the new code doesn't exist and the new code has a different process, shouldn't that be honored in some kind of way? I appreciate the stopgap, right? Because as someone who intends to stay with the office in the fall, we definitely want to be putting ourselves in a position for success, right? But I also don't know that there's the same level of, I guess, hustle, right? In terms of timeline for us to have fill the board for the new code so much as the board for the current code, I guess is my confusion. So I completely agree with what Risa is sharing, is that if these questions are to be used for the new board, then yes, there does need to be some substantive changes. The office name again, but also some of these things don't apply. I don't even know in the fall if hearings will be on Tuesdays at 5 and Fridays at 3, which is what we've done during with the current code. So I don't know that question is relevant either. So
thank you, Christina. Gina?
I think as I mentioned that some of this the hustle is that we're already late with the new code appointments. They were supposed to have been made by the assemblies, you know, by April 1st, and then appointed by June 1st, and all of those things should be rolling along. And it's just not organized. Has nothing to do with anybody not doing anything. It's just things haven't happened. There is no office, there's no director. So in order for there to be a group that can hit the ground running, so to speak, with whatever that day they're going to meet and whatever the expectations are, the idea behind the intentional wording in the resolution was meant to be both specific enough to, you know, it's likely to be this, it'll be, you know, but further training will be made by the particular, by the director once that person is in place. And, you know, there may be other things involved. The two different cohorts are very different. And I think that the questions here, maybe the first four or five are related to logistics. The bottom part are very meaty questions. If there's a quick turnaround that you want to do to, whether it's update JAO to OCC, you know, OSCCS or anything else, I think this was, the idea isn't to nail somebody to a response, rather to get a response and get a sense of who the person is behind the response. So if there are more evocative questions, I guess there's nothing to tie these, but to Brandon's original question is, in the interest of time, these have been used for years. And I think they were actually originally created by a former JA. So yes, they need updating. I'm not sure that today is the day for that, for the overhaul that you're talking about. Those are just my thoughts.
Thank you. Any other discussion? Just a reminder, we have a motion on the floor that was seconded, and we're in the discussion period here in regards to utilization of these questions for the solicitation of applications to the UHRB to fill and begin the process of filling the UHRB that would go into effect with the new student code of conduct, which would require, in essence, as I stated, a period of training that would need to be developed. But the idea here is that creating a cohort that is ready for that to happen so that there is no gap in service, if you will. We can speak to the concern around the current number of current code of conduct UHRB members as well, if we need to. But just a reminder, what we're speaking to here is the solicitation of applications for students that would begin with the new student code of conduct, acknowledging that this verbiage does not speak directly to that, nor would we be revising it to do so, because we are operating under the current code of conduct with acknowledgement of the changes that are happening. Go ahead, Risa.
What are people going to be told that they're applying for? They're going to be told that they're applying for being on the UHRB with regard to the student code of conduct, right? The new student code of conduct. So if we give them a bunch of questions that ask them about the current campus code of conduct, that would be confusing to me. So I'm still wondering about whether the terms would be changed, or will there be an explanatory paragraph saying you're asked about the current campus code because the new student code hasn't gone into effect. I really am genuinely confused about that. And so if what we need to do is amend that motion, we can do that. But I still don't understand what people will be given when they're applying.
So go ahead, Gina.
I was just gonna say, what would be most helpful to clarify that, Risa, do you think?
I assumed that any questions we asked them would ask them about the new student code of conduct and give them a link to the new student code of conduct, and maybe direct them to parts, you know, if we were asking them about that. But I just don't understand asking people about a code of conduct that they're not going to be working with. And I understand this, the pressure we're under. That's why I'm looking for a way to do it easily. And so I'm wondering if the easiest way to do that is just to stop using the term campus code of conduct and to substitute student code of conduct, if that would work.
So yeah, you raise a valid point there. He says as we're sending this information out, having the applicants understand, you know, what they are applying for. And if you look at the questions, as I see it, the only area where it actually specifically and explicitly states the campus code of conduct are questions 12 and 13. And other than that, it speaks to the code, how they would respond to the code, the application of the code. So perhaps there might be an opportunity to make adjustments to that to state the differentiating factor, this student code of conduct or the soon-to-be student code of conduct, something of that nature, perhaps looking at an edit there to acknowledge that piece of it, or simply just stating code of conduct kind of allows for it to be applicable in both scenarios. I do hear Christina saying that there is a punitive sort of piece speaking to, and also acknowledge that the code of conduct does have still punitive aspects to it. There still are repercussions for actions. And so I don't know that it would need necessarily be eliminated. And I understand that the goal of our new student code of conduct is to focus more on a restorative justice model. And there are also punitive consequences of action. So with that, I'll pause and let Christina go.
I'm wondering if there's an opportunity to adopt what has been done in the past to fill the vacancies for the current board, and that if there's another opportunity during the summer to fill a separate board for the new code, because my impression is, I completely appreciate what you're saying, Gina, is we're behind under the new code as well, because there was that April deadline, but it's a new policy. that there was nothing in place back in the beginning of April for this upcoming new code. I also also feel like there should be some flexibility when you're implementing a new policy to kind of have some flexibility to get some things done. So I'm wondering if that is something that the Dean of Students Office can be involved in figuring out what that stopgap looks like, if that's something that can be determined over the summer for that new panel. Because the hustle, I feel like, is, again, for the current vacancy, the current board. And so that certainly needs to be completed in a timely manner, because it has to be approved by the UA. But my understanding is the new process does not require approval by the UA, and correct me if I'm wrong. So that hustle is a little bit different, and it might give us a little bit more time to formulate, kind of to Teresa's point, some questions that are relevant under the new student code of conduct.
Thank you, Christina. Go ahead, Gina.
I actually think Christina's, I was going to make the same point. You've got both Ryan and then Kevin coming along with Marla, who are the, they're the folks in the office that will be overseeing this. The urgency for the current code of conduct is to get some folks to help, over the summer. The hesitancy and confusion about how long to appoint those folks for was part of, I think, can be clarified with some of the language in your last resolution. And then just not do anything on the new student code until you get clarity and some direction. The only thing that I'll say, and I say this because of, I want to make sure that the CJC and the UA have a stake in this, is the language is a little vague. It's not that the UA doesn't have approval. There's a process for a touch that if this is deferred over the summer and there's no body to have that touch, I would hate to see the first time this new process is implemented and created without the interest and the oversight and the involvement of the assembly. That's all.
So just a reminder, we do still have the motion that was brought forth earlier that we do need to resolve. So is there any further discussion in regards to the previous motion, which was to utilize the current list of questions? And I think we have brought up some topics of concern that we need to address as well as far as the solicitation and the application process, but continuing the conversation in regards to the motion there. Risa, go ahead.
I would move to amend the motion to add that the questions will be updated to refer to the student code of conduct and other language consistent with that, because we wouldn't be using like OJA anymore, right? I mean, that language would not exist. Sorry, that was a confusing amendment. I would my motion is to amend it. I move to amend this motion to use those questions, but update them to refer to the student code of conduct and other language consistent with the student code as needed.
Okay. Do I have a second for that amendment?
Second.
Okay. All right. Now I'm going to need help in how I resolve this again.
I believe we'd have discussion on that motion to amend, and then we would vote on the motion to amend.
There we go. Discussion on the motion to amend. Regina.
Sorry, if I may, I know I'm not a voting member. I appreciate your time on this. I think a clearer way to go is leave the questions as is with the change to OJA for a cohort to be solicited for the current code of conduct to get us through the summer period. At some other point, amend the questions along with the input from the Dean of Students or Kevin or Ryan and Christina and her office, whoever may be those stakeholders, and then do a second solicitation under the new student code of conduct. That would allow us to get this, the current, fill out the current vacancies right away under the current code of conduct using methodologies and questions that we've already used.
And so let's clarify here. So the idea would be that this list of questions, as we're speaking to, the solicitation would be specifically to fill the vacancies under the current code of conduct. In essence, we would be pausing a moment on the new student code of conduct, filling a vacancy of what will be the vacant positions. The question I would wonder though is, you know, if we were to get by some miracle a mass amount of applications, and suddenly we have this huge cohort of people that are on the UHRB, that in essence limits our ability for the new UHRB. Wouldn't that be correct?
No, there you can only appoint. There are strict numbers that can be appointed. So you would never have more than that. And what we've done in the past, you know, rarely do you have that influx. Maybe this would be the year for it. And if so, there could be, I think, very easily a message to those you don't select saying, you know, that there's another opportunity coming up either in the fall or the summer or the fall that would work under the new student code of conduct. But a big part of the cohort that you need to fill were the intentional outreach to make sure that there is some availability over the summer so that the backlog of current cases can be resolved. So I doubt there would be enough students, there would be an overflow of students and staff that would be available over the summer. You never know, but there can only be X number of appointees.
Thanks. Sorry, I just had to let my cat out of the room. It was calling at the door. Okay, so I think then that answers that question of concern that we would be able to utilize this information. So I think we need to get back to the amendment was to try to focus on it being for the new student code of conduct, but acknowledging that we do still have vacancies with the current code of conduct. And perhaps because of the ambiguity as to, and the concern around the questions that were previously used not being specific to the new code of conduct, perhaps then we are looking to utilize these questions purely to fill the gaps and the vacancies in our current code of conduct cohorts to provide a sufficient enough number of members of the UHRB to hear cases in the current code of conduct. And the question, so let's just be frank, we have a short amount of time here in which to get some work done to get UHRB members. And it may be not feasible for us to address both the current code of conduct vacancies and the new student code of conduct. Because to call a spade, we kind of have to turn these questions around now to be able to do that. And you know, at this point, we've actually lost quorum as well. So we don't even have the voting members to be able to vote on this one. I do see that Laura mentioned that she would be able to respond via text, but I think she would have to come back and hear this whole spaghetti unraveling for that to actually be possible. So we're a bit of a bind. So I'm not sure how we best address this. Risa?
I have to say I'm more confused now than I was before. And I realize that everybody's trying to be clear, but are we now, and you know, we had this motion on the floor. I mean, it's so confusing that I think we should just figure out what we're doing.
Yeah.
So what is it that you're proposing, Brandon?
Well, so the original conversation began around filling the new student code of conduct. As the conversation went about, it seems to be some concern around the questions, the ambiguity of, the statements in this questionnaire as they would pertain to the new student code of conduct, and they're not well addressed. So then the conversation kind of shifted to, do we look to just fill the current vacancies in the current code of conduct to be able to address those cases under the current code of conduct and ensure there's sufficient members of that cohort for the UHRB, and then look to, in essence, press pause for a moment on the new student code of conduct cohort, which we have a resolution that addresses our ability to fill, but we don't have the time to do both of these things. And so, you know, I think in light of the fact that we currently don't have quorum and we don't have this, we may have to readdress our approach here, but we do need to do something to get vacancies filled in some way, shape, form, or fashion. That's at the core of all of this. And I think it sounds as if the best case scenario would be to fill the current code of conduct vacancies to address and ensure that we have folks to hear cases. And because, you know, Christina did send me the numbers of cases they have. They're not insignificant. They're not extraordinary, but they're not insignificant. And there are cases that need to be heard. And they do need a group of UHRB members to address those. So it seems as if our best case scenario here would be to address the current code of conduct cohort and fill those vacancies.
Can I follow up?
Yeah.
That's what I thought people were saying. However, you now have this resolution 22, which is quite specific about June 1st start date for the cohort for the new code of conduct, the new student code. So and let me just say substantively, I don't have any problem with what you just said. What I'm asking now is whether this would need to go back to the university assembly to say this would be a new approach, because at this point we're basically charged, right, with this June 1st deadline.
So there is a specificity, but it also acknowledges an ambiguity. And that sounds weird, but in essence, what it's saying is that there is no clear start date for the new student code of conduct except the beginning of the semester. And that, in essence, Resolution 22 allows for us to be able to fill those positions and acknowledges that we are able to, and we are able to solicit for current code of conduct cohorts. And at all times without need, we can address and move forward applicants in the current code of conduct under the current code of conduct rules and regulations, right? So we could have, without any resolution whatsoever, moved forward with UHRB solicitations, taken applications, and ultimately submitted a list of names to the UA for members of the UHRB. So we would not be acting outside of that resolution to do so. That power always existed in being able to fill the UHRB seats. the goal of that resolution was really to allow us to create these two separate cohorts and to be able to solicit for them individually if needed.
I was good up till half of that. It was a very long sentence. If we could kind of break, and I'm really not trying to be difficult, I'm just losing the thread after a certain point. I'm fine with the, let's get the current code covered.
Okay.
I just want to know in very simple terms what the resolution either requires us to do with regard to the current student, I mean, with the new student code appointments, and what does it require and what does it allow? And you're saying those are two different things. So if somebody could just explain that to me simply, I'm looking at the resolution and it's just not clear to me.
Gina, I would definitely appreciate your help in this lift.
I think I can help. In the line 54, the be it further resolved, the CJC shall initiate the application process for appointees to begin their term on June 1st, lasting until their graduation at May 2023. So any term of an assembly, including the UHRB members, is from June 1st to May 31st of whatever their term is. So that's not it's not meant to, nor do I think it necessarily mandates that the appointments have to be made by that date. That's just the start date of the term. So whatever that cohort is, that would be their first start, their term dates. The start dates will coincide with the effective date of the student code of conduct. So that gives a little bit more latitude. We don't know when that's going to be. We know when it has to be by. So at some point over the summer, that new student code of conduct will go into effect. That will be the start date for that cohort of members. And then the next be it further on line 59, that just states that those who are selected for that will only hear student code of conduct cases. So those three resolve clauses are about the new code of conduct separate cohort. The last, the be it further resolved, the UA shall entertain extension of appointments. This is the what we were trying to do, and perhaps could have done it a little bit more clearly, is to say, rather than do a whole new solicitation, we need some members to be available under the old code. We have members that are expiring on May 31st. This resolution allows us to ask them if they'll extend. They'll extend until the old code, the current code of conduct, is no longer in effect. So we don't know how many actual vacancies we have because we haven't asked if folks want to extend. We'll know that soon. And then we'd have to, ostensibly, we could use the questions, updated to refresh the name of the office or whatever, go through the normal process to fill whatever those vacancies are. Hopefully we wouldn't have that many. As I mentioned, in years past, the process for summer emergency appointments was not formal at all. It was, there were student athletes, there were student tour guides on campus. They were recruited, filled the seats, did a great job. This summer is a little different because it's a backlog of cases. It's just not cases that came up over the summer. These are cases that have to be resolved in the summer. So does that help clarify the two cohorts trying to be clarified in the resolution?
Yeah, I understand that. I guess I'm still not clear on what the proposal is to do now then. Oh. Is the proposal just to go for the old cohort and under the current code and just to wait to do anything with the new student code? And if that's the case, to wait to do anything with the new student code, do we need to go back to the UA for any changes?
So I think that then Yes, as Gina explained, it doesn't give us a specific we must and have to in this. It gives us the opportunity of filling that new student code of conduct cohort when the time is available, as it said, that it can be done. So, and we have this extension opportunity. So perhaps what we could look to do then is this extension opportunity for those that are expiring. And they would in essence be, Gina, if you can clarify, would we then ask them to answer these questions kind of to refresh their application, or would we simply be able to extend their appointments?
Just extend their appointments was my understanding.
Yeah. Okay. So to Reese's question, what do we actually have to do? Like, do we actually have to do a solicitation at this point, or would that get us sufficient numbers to manage this and we look at some opportunity for this new student code of conduct solicitation to work on the questions, take some time to do that, figure that piece out, and really we're just filling the extensions via the resolution.
So I think that we don't know how many vacancies there are. I think the invitation to extend should go out right away. I think there was a draft of the email that we can dust off and send now that we know who we're talking about. And then whatever vacancies there are, go through the process to fill those. The only piece that, again, I just want to make sure isn't lost in any of this is what the resolution does is it whenever that new student code of conduct cohort is selected, it specifies an action or at least a piece of the process for the UA and implicitly for the CJC. Whatever the response is, I think this resolution is important in not just filling the cohort now, getting the people in place, but for that touch at some point, because the process cannot be done as it's articulated in the new code without the new structure in place. I'll send you the draft of the invitation to continue. Some of these students may be graduating. Some may just not have the bandwidth to do it or whatever, but we'll know soon, and we can give them a deadline how many vacancies there are.
I mean, that sounds reasonable to me to move forward with the extensions, and then that allows us to understand kind of what the vacancy numbers are. And we do have a meeting on Friday, so perhaps by that point we can get a sense of, Ryan Lombardi will be visiting on Friday, but we could save some time at the end just to speak to whether or not there needs to be a solicitation for filling current code of conduct vacancies due to a concern of how many actually extended. If you send that out and the immediate response is that none of them want to extend, that puts the OJA in a difficult situation in being able to assemble the number of members they need for the cases. So then we could readdress, perhaps this gives us an opportunity to look at these questions, make minor changes between now and then to the current code of conduct solicitation. And we put a pause on the new student code of conduct solicitation, acknowledging that we need a little bit of work to be able to do that effectively. How do we feel that might wrap the puzzle that I think I figured out at times? I didn't always.
Can I just ask, what sort of timeline is practical in terms of the new student code of conduct group? What the pause, I understand the pause, but do we have something in our imagination about what that period would look like in relation to, committees still being in place and, people being able to work on it?
I mean, I think it might be, from a logistical standpoint, it may not even be achievable. The UA won't be in session. The CJC, perhaps could call for an emergency summer and ask the UA to do emergency summer. But it seems as if it might be something that ultimately falls to the start of the new code in the semester for that to happen effectively.
And so when we're meeting with Ryan Lombardi, would that then be the moment, I know you referred to it, when we would also say, here's the deal with, sounding like Biden here, here's the deal, that better than sounding like Trump. here's the deal with what we're facing, you know, under a new code, et cetera, things aren't in place. And so here's what we've worked out as what's the most practical approach to use in order to fulfill the spirit of having this new student code. Do you agree? Mm-hmm. So that we don't have somebody coming back later and saying, oh, you didn't follow the new code, even though we couldn't have followed it.
Right. I think that sounds pretty reasonable to me, Gina. I don't know, you had your hand up there.
I think that Ryan is coming on Friday is great. I don't think there's any reason to wait. I think this is a question that is timely. It needs to be answered. They should be expecting it. I mean, I think that the fact that there are dates in the new code that, you know, what's happening with all that? I think they're very good questions that articulated well. Should maybe Ryan can then come on Friday with answers to those questions so that that's a planning session. It's not just what are your plans to do with this new office, but there's some work to be done immediately and ideally before June 1st, because on June 1st, what happens is the UA changes over. So the CJC is no more. The UA exec, the new UA exec will have authority to make emergency appointments and to do emergency business. That doesn't extend to the CJC. So if there are ways that you can get the work done before that sunset period, then I would encourage anything that you can do. And if there's information you need, which I do think there is, whether it's from Ryan or Marla or Kevin, these are important questions that they should be able to answer right now. What is your plan for staffing in the first year when all these specific deadlines have already passed? Here's our plan. What do you think? And I'd be happy to participate in that. I don't mean to, you know, put anybody on the spot, but.
Well, that's basically what I was thinking, was that it's that we can take that moment to say, here's what we've worked out is what's reasonable under the circumstances. And the do you agree is more of we're assuming you will agree with that mm-hmm. kind of discussion, right? Because I do think we need to have agreement with, you know, the people that we like, something like Ryan, to say we're all working under very difficult circumstances for obvious reasons on a new code that where there's lots of gaps. We're doing the best we can. Here's what we've worked out. We assume you agree that that's a reasonable approach. And what will you be planning for staffing so that we can also be, you know, considering all of those things. And that's what I'm hearing from you, Gina, if that's consistent with what you were saying. But this would be a time to for everybody to be on the same page and for somebody to take very good notes on that. Mm-hmm. And perhaps confirm it in writing with him and follow up.
Minutes.
Yeah. So, yeah. And I think that one of the things too would be to, you know, I was planning to ask, and I think I'll follow up with an email just asking folks to send questions in advance of Ryan's visit on Friday of things they might like to ask. But I do think that the, you know, the question in regards to the staffing and training. How Ryan envisions that happening in this first year is really important to understand. And I think that, you know, I think with the, what we need to do today in the UHRB, we have the ability to offer these extensions. And I think, you know, we should go ahead and move forward with that offering of the extensions. If you want to send over a draft for me to take a quick look at, I'm happy to do so. And then we can get those extension offers out to people and then get a sense of where that leaves us from the current code of conduct vacancies to assess whether or not we will be able to achieve the numbers needed for the OJA with what that gets us. And then we would have the opportunity to solicit applications for the current code of conduct with the small edits that we could make to the questions if necessary to revise JOA to OJA and those things under the current code of conduct. And then I do think it's worth a question to Ryan and how he envisions the implementation of the UHRB under the new student code of conduct and how that works, because I will say that it's not entirely clear to me how that process will work. And so it's important for us to understand that. So again, offer the extensions, assess whether we need to get additional applications for the current code of conduct to meet the need of the UHRB. And then we look to understand the process for the new student code of conduct. And I think by all accounts, we would not be filling any positions for that new student code of conduct in this semester. So I acknowledge that was a very challenging conversation at the time, but I appreciate everyone's patience with it because it is very complicated. And I am not a legal expert in trying to understand how we get to the best place with it. But I do think the work we did to make that resolution gives us great opportunity here to address what needs to be addressed. So I appreciate all the work there. Being that the resolution or there were some motions on the floor, we no longer have quorum. Is there anything that we need to do? Do we just sweep those under the rug, Gina? But what happens with that?
Well, I think you had, you're quite right in saying that Laura should have been here for the spaghetti, but she did offer to be contacted. And with her, you have quorum, right? Four votes?
With her, yeah. Yeah.
I would suggest that you do that to just move this forward. It's a good motion, and it can may not be the cleanest, but I think everybody's got the best intention. And don't quote me on ever saying that. I should have stopped the recording. But I think Robert Platt and hopefully Robert's rules would have agreed.
Can I withdraw my amendment, my motion to amend? Because it's moot at this point, since we're really talking about the current code.
Yes, you can withdraw your amendment. Okay, and then I think then we're looking to for the motion to utilize the current questions for the solicitation of the current code of conduct, folks. So I'm gonna just try to reach Laura and see if I can get her vote on the amendment. If we can get a call to question.
I call the question. Are we voting now?
We can vote, and yes, we are voting. So all those in favor, put yes.
Are we voting in the chat? I'm sorry, I sort of lost. Oh, okay, we're doing something else, okay.
All right, we'll wait for that and we'll give the results. But as of right now, I have three yeses. No noes and no abstentions. All right, so I'll get the vote from Laura and I'll let everyone know what that is. And then now the next item that we had on the agenda is to speak to the need for summer hearings with the OJA. And so Christina put together a proposal that I can send out to folks to review. And I think in essence, at the core of it is a need for cases to be heard over the summer and an acknowledgement that there is an allowance for that. There is no clear language that states that hearings start on this day and they end on this day. If you look at actually the questions even acknowledge that at times hearings may take place over the summer when we solicit applicants there. So there is that acknowledgement. One thing I would say, Christina, that, is in your proposal that I think we talked about is, that idea of compensating for the fact that they are working over the summer. I know as a staff member, compensation is probably one of the hardest things to do at Cornell outside of paying people for their actual jobs. And so that might be an area that's a challenge, but perhaps Christina, you could just speak a little bit to sort of, you know, kind of where you're at and the concern. And I do have a meeting following this to meet with Logan just to get her perspective on this from the UA side of things, but I'll turn it over to you, Christina.
Sure, thank you. So as Brandon shared, typically the hearing board will only convene for a hearing during the academic semester. We take a pause during the winter break and also the summer break. Part of it is just logistically, it's difficult to convene a panel, right? Folks are taking a break, as they should. In acknowledging that the GA's office, we still have quite a few pending cases. Our caseload has astronomically grown this year because of the compact violations that are referred to our office, primarily for non-compliance with testing. And so I shared some numbers with Brandon, and it is a snapshot of when we took a look at these numbers. We have over 100 pending cases. And there are several of those that are moving forward to a hearing process already. These numbers, I think folks need to understand, is there are new referrals that are still coming through to our office from now until the end of the semester. So there are these are numbers that will fluctuate. And so what I am trying to do in sharing this summer hearings proposal is to put our best foot forward in trying to resolve as many cases as possible as we move through and adopt the new student code of conduct. So these hearings that I'm thinking of for the month of June and July are options that are available to students. Students still have the ability, of course, to choose to resolve their case through the hearing process in the fall, but I think I would be hesitant to not even offer that option given the number of cases that are pending. So in terms of what Brandon was sharing, you know, there are a lot of components and logistical planning pieces that need to happen, right? We need to have staff, students and faculty, as well as chairs to oversee the hearing process. And I did share from an equity perspective, everybody is a volunteer, of course, during this process, but students over the summer, they may have other commitments and wanting to perhaps explore some opportunities to incentivize their participation and perhaps offer some level of compensation for our students who serve. Our exploration of this also included conversations with the JCCs, wanting to know what their availability is, because certainly we want to create summer hearings to mirror as much as possible what a hearing would look like during the regular year. And virtual environment provides us that opportunity, but certainly wanting students to have access to the JCCs if they're looking for advisors. And so that's one piece that I've been discussing with Marissa. While their schedule is limited over the summer because a lot of law school students have, you know, summer internships, we would, of course, honor that, right? If a student wants to work with the JCC and they cannot schedule during the summer, we can look to the fall. Other than that, I think the process, we've been doing virtual hearings this year. They've worked fine. None of the rights of the respondent, complainants, or witnesses have been compromised in any way. And so we want to continue that format in the summer. So that's just a little bit more information as to what we're looking for. And hopefully we'll have the support and the folks to be part of that process.
Thank you, Christina. So I think, you know, I guess the questions that I would pose here for us to consider is whether there is any necessity for any amendments or resolutions or conversation here, because as I understand it, really the hearing process can happen over the summer and has happened over the summer in times. So really the need to continue would really be on the OJA, as I understand it, unless someone else has a different perspective. I think it would be on the OJA to say, like, we need to do this, and this is how we are going to hear these cases. I think you had talked to me a little bit about, you know, the concern around the numbers and everything. So our hope is that what we've talked about here today might address some of that. And really that a lot of this will fall from your perspective. But I do have a meeting with Logan just to hear from her if there's any concern from the UA standpoint. But that's kind of my perspective on it. So Gina, any thoughts there from your knowledge?
I shared these concerns with Brandon already, and I share them widely here. I have great concerns with compensating anybody involved in shared governance. There are wide-reaching precedent issues that would affect lots of different offices. So I'd want to make sure that all of the stakeholders and university council, dean of faculty, Joel, Mary, all of the stakeholders have a piece of that conversation well before it's implemented. I also have unless the new office is going to be able to hire and pay, which I don't think they would because of the need to sort of separate the adjudicating bodies or the hearing panels from the administrative office, as is the case right now with the OJA, I would want to be really clear on what the process is, what the funding source is, who's actually going to hire these people and deal with all of the logistical part of what that means. I think the idea of an incentive, how can we incentivize people to get involved and using cash is a great one. The GPSA has brought it up. There's lots of our peer institutions that pay their shared governance volunteers. We don't do that here. And I think it's not a casual conversation. So I would want to make sure that there's a lot of time, space, and people involved in any decision related to compensating for that.
Thank you, Dina. Reason?
Yeah, I had the same kinds of questions. I mean, it seems to me that if we're going to pay people over the summer, I don't know why we're not paying them during the year. In some ways, they may be more busy during the year, right? It may be more of a burden when they're doing other things. So I don't quite see why we're treating the summer differently, other than just that we don't usually do it in the summer. But it's making me uncomfortable. I mean, I always believe in paying people for their labor, but I would like to do that on a consistent basis. You know, are we going to change our policy so that we're going to adopt some kind of a stipend or compensation in some way for people doing this? And then, as Gina said, that source of the money, you know, will people perceive this as in some way kind of putting a thumb on scales on the side of conviction? You know, I'm using conviction in quotes here. I mean, it's making me feel uncomfortable, and I understand why, you know, Christina, you were stating it. I'm not, casting aspersions on anything. It's just, it's feeling odd to me. And so I want to raise that. And also, I'm just assuming that at least some of these cases, and maybe I'm wrong, some of these cases are going to settle in some ways, that there's going to be some kind of alternative resolution as opposed to everything going to hearing, or are you talking about really all of these as going to hearings?
So it's difficult to know how many of these cases will go to a hearing. I appreciate some of the comparisons in language. Certainly there are components of our process that resemble the criminal justice system. I think some staunch differences is that our office, we don't have the unilateral ability to resolve any of these cases, right? Everything is resolved either through the summary decision agreement or a hearing process by design, right? And so the informal resolution piece is not our approach. Our office's approach is we propose what is reasonable on the outset. We do not engage in what perhaps some prosecutors do, which is this back and forth trying to negotiate and trying to figure out a reasonable proposal, because our office, we propose what is reasonable upfront, right, based on the conclusion of our investigation. I really appreciate the precedent, that this historical knowledge that I don't have, right? I've only been here for about 6 years, and so I really appreciate that. There are reasons for perhaps why there isn't that compensation that has happened in the past. I think I will share that it has been difficult to schedule hearings this semester. And this is not me in any way placing blame on volunteers in this university service, but I just think it's acknowledgement of this year has been really hard. And if there are things that folks need to prioritize, right, well then, perhaps things that you volunteer for might perhaps go to the wayside. And so I've been here for 6 years now, and it's rare that we have to reschedule a hearing because we can't constitute a board. And we've had to do that this year. So I have some serious concerns that we're going to be hearing old code cases for 2 years, right? And the staffing and the confusion and just the optics of that can be really concerning. I recognize that there's a lot I can't control in the process, a lot that none of us can perhaps control in the process, but this is my suggestion, right? That we explore this opportunity to see if we can resolve some cases over the summer.
Can I just say, I'm assuming you're gonna do this anyway, Christina, but I thought Gina's point about making sure that this is vetted, you know, by counsel's office is a good one. Obviously the other people could be involved too in the administration, but counsel's office in terms of, you know, not wanting to walk into something that actually makes it even more extended into the future.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the compensation piece adds a layer that I don't believe would be feasible to achieve and get resolved by this summer. From my perspective of kind of, you know, what it takes to get that to happen. I wanted to get a stipend for a staff member to be able to have professional dress. And that took 6 months of conversation, those kind of things are challenging. And I think that to the point that this is a shared governance in this model here, Cornell doesn't allow for that conversation. So I learned that I'm not really gonna get that vote they promised me for running this committee, but you know, I'm just joking, just a joke. But anyway, so I think that overall the desire to run through the summer, I don't foresee any challenges there in being able to do that except for getting people to hear the cases and do that. And hopefully we'll be able to, through this extension options for folks, be able to get some additional members to join, to be able to continue the UHRB. And then we can address whether or not we need to look for additional applicants. And then, like I said, I'm meeting with Logan here shortly. We're gonna talk a little bit and see if there's any other concern that I'm not addressing. So, with that,
Sorry, Brandon, can I just interrupt? I see, Robert, you know, you put something in. I'm assuming you need JCC, not OCC. The vetting with the JCC, yeah. And Christina, I'm assuming that you're talking with the JCC's office about this too.
I've shared that we're exploring summer hearing options with the JCC's. I have not shared the specific proposal, but I think that this would have been an opportunity to discuss that. Sure. Mm-hmm.
So I just want to, we just have a few minutes here and I do have to end on time. I've got a meeting, like I said, with Logan to discuss this. So just a reminder, we have Ryan Lombardi's visit this Friday. I'll send out an email asking folks for questions in advance for that visit. And then just wanted to confirm that Kevin Williams and Marla Love will be visiting us on the last meeting of the semester, which is on May 12th. In which we will be hearing from Christina and Marissa as it pertains to kind of the compare and contrast of the current and new code, kind of looking at those two, which greatly looking forward to. And in fact, Kevin and Marla felt that was a good time for them to be here to visit as well, to hear that from members of the JCC and the OJA from their perspective. So I think that's great. And thank you so much, Christina, for getting that together for us. And looking forward to that. So again, I appreciate, I know we had a bit of a roundabout circle to get to where we can move forward with some things, but I think we have a good plan of action here to try to get as many UHRB members for the current code of conduct addressed. And then one of the questions for this Friday, I would encourage you to think about how you might like to ask it is to speak to Ryan about, you know, his perspective of that UHRB and ensure that we understand his goals and intents as to how to go about moving that forward in this fall semester. ushering in a new code and filling all these vacancies and these positions and figuring everything out. And, you know, so you all know, one of the questions that I'm going to ask Ryan specifically is what he sees as the role for the CJC as it pertains to the new student code of conduct. I think that's really important for us to hear from his lens of how he would envision us best supporting the student code of conduct in this committee. So that's the question that I will be asking. And so I'll send out that and ask everyone to send me questions in advance so we can send those over to him. And, you know, knowing Ryan, he's also going to be open to questions that come up as we're in the meeting and conversation. So don't feel as if you send something and then something comes up in the moment, we'll have opportunity as well there. So thank you all very much. I think with that, we can probably go in and end early. I can refill my water bottle, trying to stay as hydrated as I can here and get ready for my next meeting. And look forward to seeing you all on Friday with Ryan's visit. And thank you so much.
This has been a production of Cornell University on the web at cornell.edu.